Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, welcome back to Twins Talk Theater. Today it's just Twin and I. We thought we'd talk about some stuff that we experience where we work. Where I work at the Norris, we do three different kinds of shows there. The way that we break them down is called produced, presents, and rentals. We are a theater. The Norris Theater is a physical theater. And so in that space, we do these three different kinds of things. So I was going to go into the differences of those. I know some other theaters may call things differently. Some theaters are a theater company and they go into a space to rent it. Since I work at an actual company that has this space, we have those people come in. So we are going to talk about the differences of that. So the first one I wanted to start with today was the produced, we call it the produced series. Now, anything we produce is all in-house. We have a professional series and an education series, a conservatory series, but it's all done in-house. We cast, we do all of the crew, we either rent the sets or we build the sets, we bring in the lights, we do all of the rehearsals. Everything is done in-house. We pay for everything, we raise the money for everything. Sometimes there's a difference in renting a set versus building a set. It just depends on the timing, the money, how elaborate the set is. But it's still
if you have access to those sets to rent, because sometimes you can't rent those sets.
Exactly. We just did Putnam County Spelling Bee, and it's a small set, so you just can't really rent it. So we had to build that one. But when we did Sound of Music and Mary Poppins and things like that, they're just too big to build in a decent amount of time, and plenty of people own those sets, so we rent them and truck them in and then unload, build them, and run the show. But we still consider it all produced because we have an in-house producer who's Chris Gilbert, and we do everything in-house. The next series that we have is called a present series. And what that is the one-night acts, one-night shows that they're already produced, already created, and we bring them in, we pay a sum of money, we bring them in and put them on for the day. Some examples of that are the magic shows that are seen around, a lot of concerts, even rock and roll concerts can probably be considered that because they already have the show together. They've already figured out the lights, they've already figured out the sound, they already have the actors and the costumes and the music. And they come into a space for one or two days or maybe a week and do the show and leave. That is kind of a split job-wise, because when you get a present show or you get a band or something, it usually comes with a contract that both companies agree on, the producers and the presenters. And it has information like what time let's say we're doing a band. What time the band shows up, what kind of lighting they need, if they have their own lighting technicians or if we have to have the lighting technicians, a writer that talks about hospitality, what kind of food needs to be provided, how much food is provided, if there's hotels, and all of that stuff. And then it usually is a couple days beforehand things are figured out, well, like bought the food and all that, then it's usually a 12, 16 hour day for at least our theater to bring in that show, put it together, do the rehearsal, do that show that night, strike afterwards, and they're done. So we call it presents because we buy it from somebody else. They come in basically ready and we rehearse, we put it on and leave.
I think this is most of the time or most of what happens in like Broadway touring shows or off-Broadway touring shows.
Yes.
When you see Wicked that's going around or Hamilton that's going around, they're not being produced by the venue they're in. They're already produced on Broadway and produced by a company. Networks is a big company that does a lot of Broadway shows. And then they just find locations throughout the United States that want to present that show. And so they come as an entire package. And the in-house crew really just has to open their doors to them and let them in. And sometimes you do have a little bit of a mix, depending on the company or the show, between in-house crew and crew that comes with the show. But a lot of times, like, the whole crew, or at least the heads, will all come with the show, because then they know how the show runs, and then they'll just use local crew to do all of the smaller load-in and load-outs and running of the shows. But there's always crew that comes with the show that manages everything.
Exactly. And if it's a big show, especially like those, they usually come with, I've seen 8, 9, 10 semi-trucks of sets, lights, costumes, backdrops. They come with everything, and they're just using that house, that theater venue, to do everything in. So that's what I normally refer to as a present show from the in-house perspective. The last one is a rental. It's a rental like you would consider going into any space. So the Norris is also a rental house. We own the space. We have the lights, we have the curtains, we have the seats, we have the crew. And a company will come to us and say, hey, we want, say, a ballet come in and say, we want to do the Nutcracker. We want to rent your space, but they're going to produce everything. It's their costumes, it's their kids or performers or whoever's doing it, it's their director. And they come in and rent the space. And since most, like, dance companies don't have crew who know how to move scenery and all, they also rent our crew. And that's solely a rental. We don't do anything in-house besides work on the contract, figure out, you know, when they're coming, when they're going, how many people they need, what ticket prices are going to be, so we know how to put them up in box office. And then they come in that day, and we basically just say, okay, here's your crew, here's your timeline, this is when they have to go on break, this is when you're scheduled to leave, and the outside group does everything else. Those are a little easier on our side because it's a lot less work for me because somebody else is figuring everything out and coming in and just using our stuff. So theater, you never know if you go into a space exactly, I mean, you will know ahead of time, but just because a show is put on at a specific theater does not necessarily mean that that theater did all of the pre-production work. You could, you know, if you go to the Amundsen here in L.A. and they're doing Wicked, which they ran for a number of years, the Amundsen itself didn't actually cast anybody, didn't actually audition anybody, didn't actually work with the designers to come up with stuff. They actually just worked with the company who did that to make sure it fit in the space and sold the tickets and everybody got paid from whatever side they were getting paid from.
There's some theaters, and I don't know if the Amundsen is like this, but there's some theaters that are really just touring venues.
The Amundsen is basically a touring house. I don't think they've ever done anything in-house.
Yeah, so there's some theaters that literally do not produce their own shows. They're just like a shell that you come in and produce your own shows in, as opposed to some other venues that do both. Where I worked up in Binghamton, New York, at Tri-Cities Opera, we would produce in a local venue, but they also did rental shows. So like there, it was always one of the first stops for small Broadway shows would do out of town tryouts there. So they're mostly just a venue that wasn't produced in it, but we considered ourselves producing in there because we designed for that space and we worked with their crew and everything was built for that space. So even though we were an outside company as Tri-Cities Opera producing at the Forum Theater in Binghamton, we didn't own the space, so it was kind of a hybrid of what Stacey says. A lot of like opera companies, and especially, don't own a specific venue. They'll rent the venue and then go in and produce there. So it's kind of like what Stacey's saying, how they rent out their stuff. That's what a lot of opera companies do because they don't have the luxury to actually own a building that has a performance space inside of it.
There's a lot of upkeep on owning a building, just like owning a house. I mean, you got to make sure. Even the minor things, you have to worry about the plumbing and the bathroom and what ticketing system are you using to sell the tickets and how often do you do maintenance on your lighting equipment and when do you pull up the stage and put it back down because, you know, it's gotten old and it's not laying flat. So that's why a lot of places don't own theaters, just because if every company owned a theater, then half of our theaters would have nothing going on most of the time because they just can't
support enough.
Yeah, it doesn't make enough money to sit empty. It has to be full as much as possible to generate the revenue to keep that physical building open. So there's a lot more theater companies than there are physical theaters, because everybody in a general area usually uses one of the specific theaters or any theater in that area, and then the touring people come through and use the theaters as well.
Well, and so do like ballet companies and philharmonics and orchestras and graduations and children's shows. You know, everybody can use one venue,
yeah,
if it's built correctly, and not have to pay for all their own.
Yeah, it's much cheaper than everybody owning their own venue. So that's how I break it down on the different things that come through the theater. Now, Cindy has a slightly different experience doing opera, because in musicals and straight plays, often you get a script. Everybody has, you know, the same script for a show. And if you rent a set, then you have the same set somebody else used. But everything else is created in-house for a produced show, meaning the blocking is different and the costumes can be different and, you know, the actors are different depending on what venue it is and who cast it and a specific show. But for a lot of opera, especially all the classic operas, there's a specific style and a specific...
Or there can be,
that is kind of expected to see in an opera.
So my years in opera, I actually have more experience in newer operas and less produced operas. But I guess you can kind of break it down into like four categories. So what's traditionally done is... I say traditionally done. I think in the like last 50 years, there are a number of theaters that have sets for traditional operas like a Traviata, a Bohème, Madame Butterfly. And then companies would rent those sets and those costumes, and it would kind of come as a package. So when I was at Tri-Cities Opera, we owned, I want to say like 18 sets and 23 costume plots. And so we did a whole rental business by renting these things out. So somebody like Syracuse Opera or Pensacola Opera would, or Memphis would call us up and say, hey, we're interested in renting your Marriage of Figaro set. So we would negotiate how much it costs and all the paperwork and drawings. And I would send them all the drawings so they know exactly what the set looks like, how it fits in their space, what flies in and out, all the scene change paperwork. So then they would do their whole show off of our set and costumes, or you know, one or the other, or they can do both, but they wouldn't do any of the blocking that we've ever done before. So they would still have a director and stuff to do all their own blocking. At Tri-Cities Opera, I did this with a Sweeney Todd. So we were producing Sweeney Todd, but we didn't have a Sweeney Todd set. So we actually rented it from another company, which is escaping me right now. So they sent us the set. And so when we actually loaded it in, we had to bring their technical director out to load in the set and then to run the show with their set. That's been common in the opera world for, I would say, at least 50 years now. That's what's been happening. In the last couple of years, there's been this huge shift because people are getting tired of seeing the same shows on the same set over and over. So a lot of new operas are being written right now. Smaller operas, or more like, it's not called concert. I forget the name of it, but where you have a much smaller cast and a much smaller orchestration, you could create your own. So I've done a number of like, I've done Hydrogen Jukebox twice, or Follow the House of Usher, where we actually kind of treated it as you would a musical, in the sense that like we came up with designs, we designed it, we built it, we produced it all on our own. And so it's all completely unique and brand new. And it's not rented from anywhere else. And it's not a set that anyone's seen before. And it's not staging that anyone's seen before. With much, much larger shows and much larger companies, there's also this thing called co-production, which is really big lately. And that's a good example of that is The Magic Flute, which I just saw at Opera Philadelphia. So it was co-produced with, I don't know the specifics because I wasn't on the co-production, but at least four different companies, I think. And that way you can ensure that four different companies kind of split the costs, and they all guarantee that they're going to produce the show. So that way you can get a much larger show, much more bang for your buck, and not have to upfront all that kind of money. Because it can be upwards of like $20 million. But if you split it between four different companies, everyone's still paying a lot, but you're not doing everything. So for example, this Magic Flute started in Minnesota, I believe. and they built it and they produced it first, and then it went to LA Opera and they produced it, and then it went to Cincinnati, I believe, and then it came to Philadelphia, and there might have been one more stop along the way. So when this happens, it's the exact same set, it's the exact same costumes, wigs, makeup, lights, everything's the exact same. Sometimes you have the same singers, sometimes you have new singers. When we did it in Philadelphia, I think all of the singers were brand new. But with that package, something that's co-produced, it goes, all of the staging is exactly the same. So if you were to see the Magic Flute that was in Minnesota Opera, it would be the exact same staging 5 years later when it was produced at Philadelphia Opera, because the director and choreographer go with that production, or an associate director and assistant director go with that production. So what's awesome about that, like I said, is you get this huge, huge production that one company can't produce, but you kind of spread it out. So I think this was like a 5-year cycle, and they spread it out across the United States. So, you know, something like San Francisco or Los Angeles and San Diego wouldn't do it within the same year because you're too close for your audience members. But the way they jumped around the country really worked. What's also great about doing a show like that is you get all of your paperwork. So I know Magic Flu, and I'm maybe giving some of this stuff away, but when the stage manager showed up in Philadelphia Opera, they had all of the paperwork. They knew exactly what all the scene changes were, when people entered and exit the stage, when all of the projections happened. And so from day one in the rehearsal hall, it made tech so much simpler because they already knew everything that happens. And sometimes you even get the paperwork for it. I know when I was at Cincinnati Opera, we did the 4 shows we did that year, well, at least 3 I know, were all remounts. We did a Faust, my first, Nixon in China, Cozy, and Aida. And again, we all showed up a week early to do pre-production, and we were given all the paperwork, the assistant director's book, all this stuff. So it was really easy to kind of
remount
and get everything in your book. So the staging process kind of goes a lot faster because your stage management team and director already know what's going on, so you don't really have to figure it out from scratch. So there's advantages and disadvantages to it. I like doing shows like that, but I also like doing brand new shows that
you have kind of a say in the creative process.
Yeah, and what happens, and you can like fit it to your space. Because in these shows, sometimes too, it's more difficult to design a set that you know now has to fit into 20 other spaces because no theaters are exactly the same.
As well as break down and fit into a truck. And then be shipped, but be able to be put back together by a brand new crew at a 1 or 2 days, and then come back down in a couple weeks and move. So the design process is very different because trucks only come in a certain size.
You need your set pieces to break down in a fashion that can store and travel really easily and go back up really easily. So you build it differently that way.
Yeah. I think one big difference between the... And we're kind of jumping away from produce, presents, and all. But in musicals, people learn parts and are good at parts. But I think it's a much bigger thing in opera for people to, once you know the part of Don Giovanni, then you can do it most anywhere because the music and all is exactly the same. And because there is no words or it's just music, then it's a little more set to what happens in the character development and all.
Well, especially in the last 30 years when people were doing pretty much on the same sets, you know, a Mimi could pretty much fly in day before opening, look at the set, meet all of her castmates and play Mimi because, you know, most sets for Bohème are very, very similar. And so, you know, you have to enter through this door because there's only one door in the garret. You know, you have to sit at this specific table when you're at Café Mamousse because that's the table that you have to sit at. Which is why I kind of like that opera is kind of going away from that and into new productions. It makes it harder to like pull people in last minute, but I think it's just more exciting for the audience and the people working on it. That being said, once you know Mimi, you can sing Mimi for the rest of your life because you know the music for it, which is I don't sing, so I don't know, but I would think that's like half the battle is learning the music and then the second half is figuring out the staging and all that stuff. So once you know the music, you could sing it the rest of your life. Like I said, when I did Faust, our Marguerite had sung Faust for 20-something years. Like that was one of her roles, and she showed up with all of her own costumes and wigs and makeup, and that's her role because it was a traditional piece, and she just knew what she was doing, and she'd sung this role so many times, she knew exactly what she had to do.
Yeah, and I think that just doesn't really happen much in plays or musicals.
Right.
Yeah, people don't get kind of shoehorned into, I sing these three parts and that's it, which is very different.
So the other thing I want to say about a similar thing to I don't want to call it like a co-production, is sometimes you do shows that the entire show will transfer, including all the singers and everything. So when I was at Long Beach Opera, they had a relationship with Chicago Opera Theater because Andreas was general director of both companies for a few years. So there were a number of shows that we would start produce at Long Beach, knowing that it was going to transfer to Chicago, and then like a week or two after it closed in Long Beach, pick up the entire show, singers and everything, and move them to Chicago, which would be a lot shorter rehearsal time. When I took Fall of the House of Usher from Long Beach to Chicago, we didn't bring the supers with us, so I showed up a week early and kind of trained the supers in how to do everything, and then the singer showed up, and in 2 days we were on the stage and opening the show because we brought everybody with us. So there's a lot of different things you can do. Kind of what Stacey said earlier, you can't walk into a space and assume that they built everything and did everything from scratch, because you don't really know, unless you're in on that thing, if it's a produced show, a co-production, if it's a rental show, if it's a, you know, how it got there.
Yeah. And it's almost always listed in the program what it is, you know, produced by or presented by, or, you know, where the
costumes by.
Yeah, where the set's rented from, where the costumes are rented from. And if it doesn't say any of that, then you can assume it's all done in-house. Otherwise, look at the program and see what it says, because it'll tell you where everything comes from, or if it came in-house, or who designed it, even if it came from somewhere else. And let everybody know what it is. I know a lot of people, everybody gets programs. That's a very common thing for theater. And everybody looks at the actors and reads the bios, which is excellent. I always read the bios first. But those other pages in there do tell you who the production team is and where the set came from, or who the director is, or if this is an in-house event or not an in-house event, or, you know, there's all kinds of other information in there that will answer any questions. So it's a very useful to read the program if you're wondering where it came from. It's also very useful, I know, when looking for sets, or if you want to rent the space, to also look up that information in there. Say, we just finished Putnam County Spelling Bee, and somebody came to me the week afterwards and said, hey, we work at a theater down in San Diego. We're doing this show a couple weeks after you finished this show. Where did you rent your risers? I said, great, we built the risers, want to buy them? Because most people don't rent them. And they weren't square risers, they were kind of on a parallelogram. And they needed them, and we had them, and we were just going to trash them. So it's best to, you know, sell them or rent them or give them to somebody else to do. Because it just...
Then you're helping other companies.
Exactly. And it's nice to share, because if it's just going to go in my trash can, it might as well go to a different company and be used there and maybe somewhere else before it goes in a trash can, because most people don't have room to store everything. So there is a lot of trading, borrowing, renting, moving things around in theater, because nobody, especially in Southern California, has the space to, like we said, not everybody can own their own theater. There's just not enough space for that. Not everybody can own all their own sets, because where are you going to store that? And why should everybody own the same set when you can borrow, rent them from other places?
But I do have to say, when I was at Tri-Cities Operas for 2 years, we were very lucky in upstate New York that years ago they built, purchased a building and then added onto it. So we had a whole bunch of storage areas. So we were able to store all of our sets and costumes like in-house in our own building. And I learned while I was there that that was very uncommon, that places, other opera companies who did have storage, it was usually off-site or sometimes even in another state. I think Boston actually stores their sets in like West Virginia or something, and San Francisco stores it on the other side of the bay. So it takes a long time to get to. But we were super lucky at Tri-Cities Opera to have everything in stock and to store everything. And it saved us so much money on shows, because when we were going to do a Bohème, we have the Bohème set and the Bohème costumes. We, of course, had to pull it out and fix up some things, you know, but that saved us $60,000
in renting
without having to rent, or even $120,000 to build a brand new set. But it also saved us on other shows. When we did Hydrogen Jukebox at the end of last season, even though it was a brand new show and we built it all from scratch, we were able to pull so much from our stock. So a lot of our props were pulled from stock, or, you know, certain furniture pieces were pulled from stock. So even though it was a brand new show, we didn't have to buy or purchase all of those items. So some companies are really lucky to have that. And we were super lucky at Tri-Cities Opera to save that kind of money. And even though we had to pay for storage, we had all that stuff at our fingertips. And I would literally just have to like walk out of the rehearsal room 20 feet to our props area and just pull whatever we needed, which saved us time as well. So it was a really good place to work, and a good place to have that flexibility and to have all that stuff on hand with us.
Yeah. I think in the theater world,
it's not so common.
It's not so common, but it's also a very small community. I mean, it's across the whole country and across the whole world. But if you know that you want to do opera, then there's only a handful of places that rent opera sets. So you get to know those places. And when you work with them, you learn their production team and you learn their the way they ship or who you're talking to or something like that. I know here on in California, we have quite a few theater companies around. But a lot of them, like, it's people work in the different areas. I mean, I work at two or three different theaters around, and you borrow from different theaters and you meet someone and they say, hey, I'm doing a show over here, but I heard that you did this show over there. Where did you get this prop? And it's like, oh, I went to this third place to get a prop and I know they have it. And it's just great to communicate and be open and share things and get things around, because yeah, we can't all own everything. We can't all have, you know, a prop shop 20 feet away that has everything. So knowing where to go and working with those people instead of being like, no, it's my prop, you can't have it. Or it's my set, you can't rent it. It's like, oh, dude, come on.
Share with the rest of us.
Share with the rest of us. We want to do theater too. We want to produce a show. And it'll help everybody in the long run. Just get theater out there and get people interested in it and get patrons knowing what it is. To do that, which I think is also great at the Norris, that we have a space, and even though we produce our own in-house shows, that we do open it up to community. We have a lot of community people who come and do shows. We do three Nutcrackers every year with different dance groups on the Hill. We have a fifth grade graduation with a local elementary school that uses it every year. I don't know how many band concerts and orchestras, and I think there's a preschool graduation, but I mean, it's one or two days and we're not using the space because we can't have something on stage the whole time. So it's a very community thing. Even if we're a professional house, it is still building the community, connecting people together, using it for different things, which also helps get people into the house to see what other shows are going on. So even though there's, you know, produced, presents, rentals, co-productions, anything like that, it's still bonding the community, bonding people in theater, and presenting art, which I think in the end is
what everybody wants to do.
Yeah, is what we're all trying to do. Raise some money so we can keep doing it, but in the end, we're all trying to do art, do theater, do live performance in some way or another. So I think this is going to be a short podcast because there's just, well, without another person to talk to, it goes a little faster. So thank you for listening and hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you next week for an interview. I'm not sure who we're going to have next week, but
I'm someone excited.
I'm sure it'll be good because we've already recorded some and we're excited. We just need to figure out who we want to put out next.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Twins Talk Theater. If you would like more, visit our website at twinstalktheater.podbean.com. or on Facebook at Twins Talk Theater.
You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. Also, give us a review on iTunes and tell us what you liked about the show.